You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, an expert on the science of smell tells us how bad scents can be measured and what that can tell us about regulations for large livestock operations. First, when you come down with a cold or a flu, you'll probably have that feeling of malaise, a sensitivity, a touch of maybe even sadness. None of that's fun, but it turns out that can all be a big part of our body's response to help us get better faster. Our next guest says taking all those symptoms together, we can think of being sick as a kind of emotion, not just a physical state. Joshua Schrock is a PhD candidate in anthropology at the University of Oregon. His research includes the ways that disease and infection have shaped human evolution. He recently wrote about this for The Conversation. Joshua, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on, Rob.
Well, we could throw a lot of words to describe that state we feel when we feel sick. You use the word in your research, lassitude. Talk about what goes into that feeling.
Well, I think we've all had the experience of being sick, and you talked a little bit about it to start off the show. But you certainly feel a sense of fatigue. You're maybe a little bit more sensitive to cold and pain. Maybe you have some body soreness. You might get nauseated more easily. And so the argument that I make in the article in The Conversation, as well as some academic work, is that each of those individual features of sickness are actually shaped by evolution to help coordinate the fight against infection.
Yeah, I have thought sometimes when I'm sick, say with a throat illness, you know, something, a cold or flu that mainly feels like a throat infection. Okay, I get why I have a sore throat, but why the other stuff? Why do I have to be tired and just feel like garbage the whole time? And that's, you're arguing that stuff is actually evolved to help us get better faster?
Yeah, so take fatigue, for example. When you're feeling fatigued, you're gonna do fewer things that cost a lot of energy. You're going to do less physical activity, fewer effortful things. And because you're spending less energy on these other things, that leaves more energy available for the immune system to work. It costs a lot of energy to mount an immune response.
Right. And that, I don't always think of it that way. It's eating up calories that we might be using on a normal day for other stuff, right?
Absolutely. So, for example, every 1 degree centigrade increase in body temperature when you're mounting a fever raises the amount of energy your body's consuming at rest by about 13%. So that adds up over time.
And another part of it is, even if it's not a stomach ailment, being sick may change what we want to eat and how much we want to eat. You write that that's part of this package of lassitude, too. Why is that?
Well, when your immune system, when your body is already working to fight something off, adding another bacterium, virus, some sort of foodborne illness on top of that could be really costly. So when it's already maxed out fighting one bug, so reducing your food intake reduces the risk that you're going to bring in some sort of secondary infection. And then another perhaps counterintuitive part of it is that it actually costs you some energy up front to digest food. So in the long term, it gives you more energy. But in the short term, you're actually taking some energy to digest food. And that just taking that little break from an all-out immune response could be costly when you have a quickly replicating pathogen in your system.
Talking to Joshua Schrock, anthropologist at the University of Oregon, he says a lot of the things that go along with being sick, the fatigue, the lassitude, the loss of appetite, the general pathos, has been evolved actually as a process to help us get better. And Joshua, my wife and I use the word pathos or pathetic to describe how we feel when we're sick. And that's part of the equation too here. This part's not a signal to our body, but a signal to maybe the people around us that, hey, I could use a little help. And you write, that is also something we may have evolved as a social animal.
Exactly. Human beings were highly social. We've always lived in groups and we depend to a very large extent on our friends and family to help us out when we're sick, help us get care, help us get food, provide for our families when we can't do that. And so when you just feel generally wretched, when you feel sad, when your facial expression and your gait changes, that provides an honest signal to your friends and family that, hey, I'm in a bad place, I'm vulnerable, I need help.
Now, this all makes sense, but you use a word to describe this that kind of surprised me. This lassitude is the word you use to describe it. And you say this is, we can think of this as an emotion, which I wouldn't have thought of. Why is that?
So the way that I'm thinking about emotions is, emotions are these systems that evolve to respond to certain situations that occur regularly. So, and what they do is they coordinate mechanisms that are appropriate for the situation, turning on ones that are useful, turning off ones that aren't. So if you imagine you're walking through the woods thinking you're alone, and all of a sudden you hear a sound in the brush next to you indicating a large animal, your pupils are going to dilate, your heart rate's going to go up, you are going to be more attuned to all of your senses. So all of those things are turned up. Things that are turned off or turned down are things like sleep. You're not being distracted by hunger. So in this evolutionary framework for emotions, what an emotion does is it detects a particular situation, and it turns on or turns up the things that are useful for addressing that situation, and it turns off or turns down the things that would actually be a distraction or would not be useful for that situation.
Now, from the point of view of evolution, it seems like this is kind of a trade-off, because if I'm getting fatigued while I'm sick, if my body's learned to do that, it means I, for example, can't run away from that big scary animal or go hunting for a different one or gathering food or other resources. But it's enough of a benefit, enough of a trade-off for my body to tell me to get better that balances out. Is that how this works?
Yeah. So one of the reasons I'm really convinced that it's an adaptive thing is that it can be overridden when something more pressing comes along. So say you're homesick from work and you are sitting on your couch feeling sick. All of a sudden you hear a window shattering in the room next to you. You're going to forget that you're sick at least long enough to figure out what happened. So the fact that other more pressing concerns can override it suggests that it's being regulated in a way that's meant to benefit you.
I think a lot of times in pop culture, Joshua, when we talk about evolution, we think of macro predators, the big animals that might eat us or the ones that might sting us or poison us, and that leads to a lot of our responses. You're interested in the little guys, the bacteria and viruses. Have they had as big a role, maybe a bigger role in our evolution than the ones we can see?
They've had a huge role in our evolution. I mean, they've since life first arose, and we're talking about single-celled bacteria-like organisms here, there have been viruses and then later other things that are willing to parasitize life forms. So it's been an ongoing evolutionary arms race from the very beginning of life itself.
As we start to wrap up, Joshua, I mean, it is cold and flu season. Best of luck to you, but having done this research, when you get sick, does it make you feel a little better about how bad you feel?
I think it helps me accept the misery a little bit better. I think it does.
One small consolation, accepting the misery. Joshua, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Joshua Schrock, a PhD candidate in anthropology at the University of Oregon. He joined us to talk about his research on how some of the feelings that come with being sick, you know, the fatigue, the not wanting to do stuff, maybe losing the appetite and more, have evolved to actually help our bodies ultimately get healthier faster. Coming up, we'll stay with science, this time the science of smell, what stuff smells like, and whether we can actually somehow learn to measure bad odors in the world around us. This is an important factor, it turns out, in deciding how to regulate large livestock operations and where they can be located. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, it's a new year, and we want to hear from you. Tell us about something that you learned in 2019 and or something you want to learn in 2020. You can get us started now. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Or if you're on Twitter, tweet us @CentralTimeWPR. Let us know about something you learned last year or want to learn this year. First, regulation of livestock operations is a contentious issue, especially when the facilities include areas where large quantities of manure are stored. It often pits the owners of those facilities against local residents, many of whom say their quality of life and property values are affected by the odors. Our colleagues at WIS Context looked into the science of smell and whether something that seems so subjective can be measured objectively through science. You can read their reporting at wiscontext.org. Jacek Kozel is a professor of agricultural and biosystems engineering at Iowa State University. He researches the impact of livestock odors. He recently talked to WPR host Keely Baltina.
When we say that we smell something, what does that really mean? What's going on?
Well, that's a loaded question. Excellent question right there. So, you know, sense of smell is one of those things that we learn a lot. We don't know much still yet about it. So, you know, just about 15 years ago, a Nobel Prize was awarded for actually unlocking why we smell, why human and how human knows, processes, smells. So there is still a lot of research to be done. So we are dealing with a lot of, you know, fundamental science, but a lot of unknown things with psychology, sociology, etc.
Can scientists really then objectively measure how strong an odor is?
We try to do that. So we developed tools. They aren't perfect, but we have kind of two ways of doing this. One of them is basically take a big, like a big Ziploc type bag of odorous air and dilute this with pure air and present to, in a blind test, present it to a series of panelists, trained panelists that basically try to detect the difference between odorless air and air that is injected with tiny portions of the odor that we try to analyze.
So you're training real human beings to do this and detect the smell.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, that sort of technique doesn't get into what really is in that odor. It goes after how does this odor smell, how strong it is, how an average person represented by these trained panelists is actually reacting to something in the air that is not just pure smellless air. So that's one way of doing this. But there is, you know, there is another one where we can actually analyze those molecules, various molecules in the air, and then connect that sense of smell that we have simultaneously with those analytical tools. So we, in essence, we are able to find sort of the needles in the haystack, if you will. Are those needles being perhaps compounds that create smells that we experience in our everyday life, but they are buried, you know, in this, you know, this massive mixture of thousands of different compounds. And not all of them contribute, only typically several few that makes us experience an odor or maybe some nice aroma.
Yeah, well, one of those is a smell that can be associated with farm animals. This is Wisconsin, especially when they're large operations. What are some of the compounds that occur there that we would identify with unpleasant smells?
So there is several of them. We identified through that process I described before, the simultaneous chemical and sensory analysis, handful of compounds that we would really want to eliminate. And some of those would be phenolic compounds. Those are the kinds of chemicals that, you know, tiny little amount in the air is very noticeable. Another class of compounds is volatile fatty acids, and then probably hydrogen sulfide. So perhaps a handful of compounds that we always detect when we work with livestock waste, ambient air in and around these facilities. They are always there.
Jacek Kozel is a professor of agricultural and biosystems engineering at Iowa State University. He's a livestock odor researcher. And Jacek, if it only takes a little bit of these compounds in the air to create that unpleasant smell, I sense it could get really overwhelming very quickly. How can we figure out the level of that? I mean, do we have tools that we can figure out to lessen the impact on people near these livestock situations?
Well, that's a great question. That's what we engineers here at Ag Engineering at Iowa State University and colleagues all around the country work on. Engineering ways of mitigating odor, not necessarily right at the farm, but the odor that might be experienced by neighbors. So we start with the assumption that there will be always manure or other sources of odor. And we try to apply something or develop some tools that will be, one, feasible for farm applications. Number two, they will fit in sort of socio-economic situation at a particular farm. So, you know, that means money, that means technology. We are very very concerned that whatever we develop and test is actually farm tested. And I should say there are probably many technologies that are actually proven to work, but they have been developed for industrial applications, for different types of industries, for much bigger level of funding that these industries have. That's not necessarily the case with many of the farmers.
We sometimes equate a smell in the air with low quality air. Is that the same thing? Is air quality really affected, or the health of the air affected when we can smell these compounds in it?
Well, so if I could deflect this question into something like, you know, the smell of soil, for example, you know, imagine the sort of situation where after rain, you would maybe want to go outside because the, you know, the environment smells so nice. So here we come into this, you know, this idea that these smells in the air are, for one, very contextual, right? For somebody that may have lived around a particular type of smells, they in essence sort of disappear. They are like a background noise to a person. On the other hand, if we take, you know, somebody that would literally be, if I could use this word, transponded from some environment right into, you know, something that smells totally different, you know, that person would likely notice it right away. And here we come back to this idea of context that, you know, some people, some odors might be very objectionable. They might be linked with something bad, actually, that happened in their lives. And on the other hand, you know, there might be some pleasant smells that that, you know, one person would consider very pleasant and another one not necessarily so.
As an engineer, briefly, what do you think that policymakers should take into consideration as they're deciding whether they're strengthening or loosening regulations around large-scale anima facilities?
Again, this is a loaded question, but I would say that we need all of the stakeholders at the table, meaning, and I know that some of the counties, for example, do that, that they try to not to make haste decisions that drive an issue in one direction or another. They are very careful about involving all of the stakeholders around this issue from the very beginning. And that's probably the key to sustainably develop or continue to have animal agriculture in a particular area where, you know, these not just the livestock agriculture, but also all of the socioeconomics is involved. Regulation probably stems from this. So we need to actually do quite a bit more work to understand, probably from political angle too, that, you know, this is a multi-level, multi-disciplinary, if you will, issue. So again, back to the stakeholders and having stakeholders at the table to perhaps compromise on how these things are or not developed in terms of regulations.
Jacek, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Jacek Kojel is a professor of agricultural and biosystems engineering at Iowa State University. He studies the impact of livestock odors. He recently talked to WPR host Keely Baltina. You can learn more about the science of smell and how it relates to regulation of large-scale livestock operations over at wiscontext.org. Coming up after the news, it's a New Year's call-in for you. Tell us about something you learned in the old year or something you want to learn in the new one. Could be a craft, a skill, a language, a sport, you name it. Email now, ideas@WPR.org, or call and get in the queue right now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll take your calls coming up. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Following a court order to remove more than 200,000 people from the state's voter rolls, the Wisconsin Elections Commission remains deadlocked over how to proceed. We'll look at the controversy and how it might ultimately be resolved coming up. First, we'll have some New Year's fun and maybe learn a thing or two along the way. I want to hear from you. What is something you learned in 2019 or that you want to learn in the year 2020? Call in now at 800-642-1234. Now, I'm not saying just like a fact that you learned, but something new, a skill, a topic, a craft. It could be some fancy pants book learning. It could be something hands-on, maybe a sport, a language. You learned it on your own. Maybe you took a class. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at Central Time WPR. And maybe you can tell us how you did it, how you got motivated, and maybe along the way you'll inspire someone else to do something similar. Again, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Now, I've got a couple, few of these, actually, and we asked around at WPR. We'll share some of those along the way. We heard from Courtney Everett, morning show producer, who says, I learned how to ride horses in 2019, because why not? Courtney says, I took 8 lessons and finally know how to trot, how to canter, and how to not fall off. In 2020, Courtney says, I'm building a full model train layout. That's pretty cool. Now, my couple of learning things, just before the new year last year, I started doing one of those language apps to try to start learning Spanish. Learned is a strong word, but I've been consistent and sticking with it now over the year, so I have bits and pieces here. And I took a swimming class Now, I could swim, and I'm doing air quotes, or I guess water quotes, before, in the sense that I could, you know, stay on the surface of a body of water and sort of propel myself. I could swim like a station wagon could swim, kind of. But I took a class. I learned new strokes, breaststroke, side stroke, improved my backstroke. So that's, you know, and I'm doing it. And it turns out when you are not in good shape and you're a very inefficient swimmer, it's a really good workout. So that's paying off for me already. I've got some others to share, and we're looking for yours at 800-642-1234, asking you, what did you learn in 2019 or something that you want to learn in 2020? Now, we've done something like this in the past from some of you who have taken up a new language, a craft, a hobby, or maybe rekindled an old one. So join in now on this New Year's Day call-in at 800-642-1234 to tell us what you're learning, or at least let us know that our phone lines are working. Huh, maybe everybody's getting ready or watching the Rose Bowl today. Well, Bill Martin's producer for Central Time says, I learned a photography lesson that I can't believe I needed to be taught. Here it is. You got to get out there and shoot. Bill says, I made a goal to get out at least 3 mornings a week, even if the weather isn't ideal. I also plan to launch a photography website and store in 2020. I didn't know that. Good luck with that, Bill. I didn't know it until I read it just now. And our own Stephanie Elkins, classical music host, says, I learned a ton about women composers and composers of color. There have been so many of them over the centuries, and their work is being rediscovered, researched, and recorded. Now, Stephanie shared some of that with us here on Central Time. She joined us to talk about 2 of those composers, Margaret Bonds and Florence Price. Well, how about you? Have you learned? Nobody learned anything in 2019. Nobody wants to learn anything in the year 2020. Join in if you have something to share with us along these lines, or, you know, just want to help a talk radio host out who had what he thought was a surefire hit for a fun caller-only New Year's Day segment. I'm going to use that pathos power we were talking about earlier in the illness segment. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dean, can you test out the phone line, see if this thing's working? I don't know. 800-642-1234. He's going to test that now. We also heard, speaking of classical music host, Lori Skelton. You know her, classical music host, regular guest here on Food Friday. This is great. We talked to Lori about Croatian food a while back. She's getting ready to go there. Lori says, I started to teach myself Croatian. Not the cooking, but the language. Lori says, I'm finding out that I learn languages better in a classroom, but will keep practicing until hosting the WPR listener trip to Croatia in May. Laura Pavin, morning show producer, has a big one to share with us. She says, I've learned how to foster a new life inside of me in 2019. I'd like to know how to foster that life outside my body in 2020. I don't know what Laura's due date is, but a lot of great lessons to learn there. Okay, now the lines have filled up. We'll get some callers on, presumably momentarily. Now we're talking about things we learned in 2019, things we want to learn in 2020. Oh, I had one more. I'm trying to learn circular breathing. I play the saxophone. It's this trick where it's complicated, but you can keep playing forever by taking these little pauses to breathe in while you breathe out through your cheek. I may never perfect that. Let's go to our callers who exist now. Jessica is with us in Madison. Jessica, hi. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
All right, great. Well, thanks for calling in. What have you learned, or what are you going to try to learn now?
Well, this past year, I got a new job, and one of the things that I learned to do as part of that job was use the statistical software that requires me to code. And I, like, that was something I'd never, ever thought I'd ever do. I'm more of a, I don't know, a right brain type of person. Uh-huh. But it was so cool to like watch myself do it and then like hit the enter button and it would do what it was supposed to do.
Now, see, I'm along the same lines as you, Jessica, but when I do venture out in the worlds of math or engineering or that kind of thing, I'm not good at it, but I feel like a different part of my brain is firing up and operating. Does it feel that way when you actually, you know, solve something that way?
Yeah, and like what was really surprising was like I was very intimidated by it at first, and I didn't want to do it. And then once I did it, I lost track of time. I just like, it was so much fun. And like I felt like a different person, sort of.
Fantastic. That is so awesome, Jessica. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I hear that from some people over the years who don't think they're math or coding people, and when they do it, They find out they love it. Thanks for sharing that, Jessica. Back to our callers now. Dana is with us in Osceola. Dana, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to share with us, Dana, about what you've learned?
Yeah, I just last December, I just got my degree in mechanical engineering.
Wow. And is that something you had set out to do? This was your long-term plan? Or were you like Jessica, where this was kind of an unexpected twist?
No, I've been, that was my ninth semester. So it was just the 2019 was the end of that saga of my life.
That was the plan. When did you first know that you you wanted to do this, mechanical engineering?
I did sort of like robotics team in high school.
Uh-huh.
And that was fun for me. And I kind of liked the problem-solving aspect of engineering. So that's kind of why I pursued that.
Now, some people out there might be, like, I think a lot of young people might be thinking, ah, no, no way, not me. What would you say to them to explore something like that, maybe through a robotics club or some other cool entry point into mechanical engineering?
Yeah, actually, I was just thinking about this with the previous caller. During high school, I always felt like I was told that you could either be good at English and art or math and science. And I realized only after high school that you can be, a lot of people are probably good at both. And just because you're good at one doesn't mean you're good at the other. And you should just try everything once.
Fantastic. Dana, thank you for sharing that. And congratulations on the degree. We are asking you what you learned in 2019, what you want to learn in 2020. Maybe they're the same thing. You're continuing as I am on mine. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls. James is with us in Fountain City. James, hi.
Hi. Happy New Year.
You too.
Yeah, you know, I've been a longtime guitar player. I've been playing professionally for 56 years or so, and just stuck with a six-string guitar. I decided this last year that I would pick up a mandolin, and it's been a real challenging experience. I've got a long ways to go. I'm certainly not going to know this thing overnight, and so it's a continuing learning process. So that's my thing for last year and for this year.
And did you say you're teaching yourself, James? Or are you doing videos online, or is somebody teaching you?
I'm a little watching some YouTube videos, and I do some jams with people that I'm picking up ideas from them, and some people are actually quite good on the instrument, so I'm getting hints about some things I can do. Plus, I've got pretty good ears, and I understand or can figure out scales and chords. And it's just a matter of, you know, of course, with anything else, of just applying yourself and disciplining yourself to sit down and do something that at first glance is a little uncomfortable, but it gets better as time goes on.
So. All right. More power to you, James. Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Want to hear what you learned in 2019, what you want to learn in 2020. If you called and hit a busy signal when the line suddenly filled up, you can try now. A line or two is open up at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Elias is with us next now in Madison. Elias, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What did you learn? What are you learning, Elias?
Right. So back in 2019, I actually dedicated myself to learning a couple circus tricks. And right now, I can ride a unicycle and juggle at the same time. And
wow.
Also do a backflip on the side.
Okay. Now, how do you start learning to do that? Like, because I would be worried about, obviously, injuring myself if I was trying to teach myself the unicycle or the backflips.
Yeah, of course. Well, I can't do it all at once yet, but we'll see about 2020. I think just practicing like an hour every day is what you need to do, and, you know, making sure you have the safety gear so that you're not scared to fall over.
Now, I know there are in Madison and some other communities these circus space groups where, you know, they're not traveling circuses, but people get together. Our own Judith Sears Poisson does some of that. She does the German wheel. Have you sought out like a community like that to learn things?
Oh, you know, I had a ton of friends in the circus in high school, and that sounds like it would be a ton of fun, but I think I want to get a lot better and, you know, maybe start my own circus or show them up.
That sounds great. Elias, thank you so much. Good luck with the juggling on the unicycle. Well, thanks for all your calls, and you can keep calling in. We're asking you to share the things you learned in 2019, the things you want to learn or continue learning in 2020. You are our guest in this segment. You can join in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let us know what you're learning and maybe inspire someone else to try something new, maybe outside their comfort zone. 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear your story coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret, and we're taking your calls about things you learned in 2019 or want to learn in 2020. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Nancy is with us next in Middleton. Nancy, hi.
Hi, I love your show. Great seeing
you. Thank
you. Took off.
Yeah.
I visited Concord and Lexington in the summer, and I'm just amazed at the history there, and picked up a book on Paul Revere's ride, which is incredible and just blowing my mind with all the things I never knew about the history here. So that's what I want to learn more about.
That's fantastic. And Nancy, I'll say I read a lot of history books, and I'm constantly amazed at, you know, the more I know or the more I read, the more I realize I don't know. Like, I keep being surprised.
Exactly.
Like, why didn't I know more about that?
Exactly. I thought he was the solitary rider. I never knew anything about the collective, how many people were involved, you know, what happened and all the issues and what could have gone wrong in the whole thing. It just, it's an excellent book. It's called Paul Revere's Ride. And seeing where all these things happen really brings these things to life as well.
I love it. Thank you so much, Nancy, for sharing that at 800-642-1234. Kaya joins us now in Madison. Kaya, hello.
Hi.
Hi, Kaya. What have you been learning?
I've been learning to do diving and playing guitar.
Wow, those are great. Now, diving, I've never done diving, and I think it'd be kind of scary. Do you find it scary to do diving?
No.
No, not at all? Now, what kind? Are you just doing straight diving in, or are you working on flips and things like that?
Yeah, I'm working on flips like that.
And did you watch the Olympics last time around? Do you like watching the pros dive?
Yeah.
Cool. And playing guitar?
Yeah.
Are you getting pretty good?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Kaya, thank you so much for sharing that. Diving and playing guitar, I'm guessing not at the same time. You can ruin a good guitar that way. Back to your calls now. Gabe is with us in Baldwin. Gabe, hi.
Hello.
Gabe, hi.
Hello.
Hi, what are you learning, Gabe?
How to dribble between my legs.
Oh, like so that kind of crossover dribble back and forth like that?
Yeah.
Cool. Do you like to play basketball?
Yes, I love to play basketball.
Okay. And are you a pretty good shot? That could use work too, huh? No, are you on a team, Gabe?
Yes, I play for the Baldwin Woodville Blackhawks.
All right. Well, go Blackhawks, Gabe. Thank you for sharing that. Good luck developing your basketball skills. Back to your calls now. We're asking what you learned in 2019, what you want to learn in 2020. Line open up now for you at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Greg joins us next in River Falls. Greg, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Greg? What are you working on?
A couple of things. I'm in graduate school now. I'm the oldest grad student you're going to talk to. I'm 69 years old.
Okay.
I'm in the master's program at the university in clinical exercise physiology. I compete in mixed martial arts, full contact, jiu-jitsu, karate, et cetera, have for 50 years, and I'm having the time of my life. One other thing, I used to have type 1 diabetes. I no longer do due to an experimental surgical procedure at the University of Minnesota 8.5 years ago.
Wow.
Nobody knows anything about this yet, even though I spoke to a crowd of over 1,200 MDs and PhDs in Denver, Colorado, as the plenary speaker for the Society of Clinical Research Associates. Wasn't a single doc in that audience that had heard the research going on with you.
Greg, thank you so much. Good luck with that graduate program. Take those skills you've got and share them with other people. Thank you so much for sharing that story. People of all ages learning stuff, which is fantastic, kind of the public radio way. Still time for your story of what you learned last year, what you're learning this year at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Joe joins us now in Sharon. Joe, hello.
Hey, how we doing?
Good. What do you got for us, Joe? What are you learning?
I am learning Irish Gaelic.
Ooh. Now, I'll say, so I'm doing that one of those language apps for Spanish now. I tried Irish for a while, and I got to admit, I fizzled on it. How are you doing on it, Joe?
I'm doing pretty well. It's a little difficult, but once you kind of learn how things are structured, it works. Instead of saying, like, I walk the dog, it's I dog walk. So kind of talk like a caveman with it.
And what led you to pick Irish in particular?
Oh, it's just my heritage.
Me too.
Great grandpa's, you know, from Dublin area. So yeah.
I've covered a lot of my heritage. I failed to learn Polish and I failed to learn Irish too. So are you going to try to go? I mean, there are parts of Ireland where you can still find people who speak it. Are you hoping to try to go and do that someday?
One day. I hate flying with passion.
Okay.
So.
Maybe do that.
We'll see.
Maybe a cruise or something like that over there.
Yeah.
Joe, thank you. Are you good at languages? Have you been in the past?
I speak Spanish just enough to get by. I speak English, obviously, so I've got two under my belt. Might as well put a third on there, right?
All right. Well, good luck with that, Joe. I wish I could lay some of the Irish I learned on you right now, but yeah, it didn't sink in, obviously. We are asking you to share something you learned in 2019 or want to learn in the year 2020. Still a couple minutes for you to join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 if you can get in a call right away. Getting back to, we asked again around here at WPR for people to share the things they learned. Michelle Good, producer of Chapter A Day and behind the board in the studio right across from me today. You've got a microphone there.
I do.
And you know how to use it.
I do.
You've got a big trip coming up and you're doing some pre-learning.
I am. I have been studying up on Muslim culture and the Arabic language and food and dress. I learned how to tie a hijab.
Okay.
I gave up on Arabic because it's very, very difficult. Everything's backwards. And
From an English speaker's perspective.
From an English speaker's perspective. But I did learn some basics like yes, no, please, thank you.
And this trip to Morocco is just around the corner.
It is. And I'm super excited about it.
And you've got room in your suitcase for your favorite talk show host.
I do.
That's probably not quite
We've
legal.
We've got a trunk. Trunk okay. ready for you.
Can you share one word with us?
I can. To say please is samhat. Samhat.
Samhat. Okay.
Samhat. Please.
You're nailing the pronunciation, I can only assume. Well, let's go back to our callers now. Michelle, Katrina is with us in Madison. Katrina, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What are you learning?
So this is like a good life lesson, but I learned how comparing myself to other people will literally kill you. In 2019, I learned to just like focus on myself, and not really like compare myself to other people.
That makes sense because you hear about this on social media, and we've talked to researchers who say this. Like, if you start comparing yourself, especially to the lives people show on social media, where it's their best life compared to all of your life, that can lead to depression, even.
Yes, and I actually work in the social media industry, and so it was so tempting to always be like, you know, what am I doing based on other people's stats or followers or whatever? And I just had to cut it out. And I'm so much more happier because of it.
Okay. And anything else you want to throw in there that you've learned, Katrina?
Yeah, this one's kind of dumb, but I learned how to use, like a lighter. I've never been able to do that. I'd always burn my fingers.
Okay. Like to light you're lighting candles, right? Not smokes.
Yes. Good. No, I do not smoke. I have asthma. I would die. But yes, I learned how to use one of those like flick lighters and I feel just so grown up.
Fantastic. Well, Katrina, I think those are both great things to learn. And time for another caller real quick. Judy in Verona. Judy, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What are you learning, Judy?
I learned to quilt this
Ooh.
Year. I'd always known to learn how to sew, and I tried knitting, and I failed terribly. So I went back to sewing and did a twin size quilt.
for Christmas.
And you actually completed a project. That's an important step, I understand, for quilters. Don't have 20 projects. Finish one.
I completed it in probably 6 weeks, and it was my mother-in-law's gift, so it was beautiful.
Fantastic, Judy. Thanks so much. Thanks to everyone who called in and shared what you have learned in 2019 or what you want to learn in 2020. A lot of great stuff out there. You can keep them coming, by the way. You can tweet us at Central Time WPR. Love to see more of your stories. Love to see people inspired, as we've heard, all ages from single digits up to 70-ish and up. It sounds like a worst fear come to life, but it has a happy ending. A couple in North Carolina called the police over the holidays after hearing noises in the downstairs of their house. As reported in the Charlotte Observer, they were watching TV upstairs when they heard someone on the lower floor. It sounded like rummaging through their stuff down there. They called 911, and the police arrived to find out it wasn't someone. It was something. Namely, it was their robot vacuum cleaner, a recently purchased Roomba. Somehow it had gotten switched on, and it did the only thing it knew how to do. It started vacuuming and bumping into walls all along the way. Now, everybody, police and the couple themselves, had a good laugh about it after the initial crisis was over. The family adopted a new name for their Roomba, Harry, after one of the burglars from the movie Home Alone. But hold on. Is this a happy ending? This Roomba switched itself on, people. It did it on its own. Maybe. Well, I want to be the first to welcome our new robot overlords. And watch out. Make sure you have that Roomba switched off and let us know if it turns itself on. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.